Sorry to say that Nancy has a migraine this morning, so she's buried under the covers, trying to keep as much light out as she can and see how she goes. It came in the middle of the night. And I had a long night as well. We went fishing yesterday, and I feel like I'm gone kind of like this. So if I sway back and forth when I speak this morning, you know it's not my normal habit. I didn't catch anything either, so, I mean, that makes it doubly worse, you know. Let me say, since this is our last Lord's Day with you, that it's been a privilege, and I enjoy being with you, and Nancy would say the same. Ask that you would be praying for us as we travel home tomorrow. Also for Nancy's mother. She has been moved out of intensive care. We spoke with her yesterday. It's still a long way to go, and I can tell her spirits are still not good. And so we just commit her to your prayers for your prayers. Genesis chapter 3. Very, very, very practical subject this morning. Genesis chapter 3 and verse 17. This, of course, is after the fall, and the Lord is speaking to the various participants in the fall, and he's now going to speak to Adam. And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake, in sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. I don't think I have to tell you, living in this environment here, that due to the fall, there is a deterioration that takes place in all aspects of life. We know that with regard to our bodies, they need to be taken care of. We cannot just fail to feed them or do things that are good for our health. So there are things that we need to do to keep it in its proper function and condition. This is also true with mechanical things. You know, you have to change the oil in your cars and in your boats and scrape the barnacles off the bottom now and then and do a variety of other things in order for the boat to at least stay in reasonable shape. But even all those efforts, eventually they come the way I see them floating around on the bars or on the other side of the creek there. They come to an end. So there's a need. And it's true with your silverware, you know. I don't know how many people have silverware these days because it requires you to kind of polish it now and then. But if you have those types of things, you need to maintain them. And it's true with our houses. Went by Barron the other day, and he was up in there faithfully painting. And I'm sure that in this environment, that's probably a pretty constant thing where you have to work on your homes to keep them from deteriorating. It's also true with land. If you have a piece of land, you could clear it till it was absolutely clear of anything other than, you know, the soil. And if you just left it like that and came back a year later, you know that nature would have taken over again. And all kinds of things would have come into the property. So if you want it clear, you have to work at keeping it clear. There's a maintenance that's required. And I say all that to say this, that that is also true spiritually. It's not just physical things associated with man and the land and the fall. It's true with ourselves when it comes to spiritual maintenance. If we just neglect ourselves spiritually, we will find ourselves deteriorating spiritually. The writer in Deuteronomy says to us that we need to take heed to thyself and keep thy soul diligently. Proverbs 4:23 says, keep thy heart with all diligence. There's implied here a need to consistently, faithfully protect our hearts and our minds and keep our spiritual lives in good condition. And this is a little thought, if there's just a few thoughts this morning that we perhaps could lodge into one of our cavities of our minds, would be this. Doing little or nothing leads to spiritual deterioration. Doing little or nothing. I want to go to Proverbs because there we see this so beautifully laid out for us. Proverbs 24. Keep that thought in mind. Doing little or nothing leads to spiritual deterioration. Proverbs 24 and verse 30. This is an individual who is making observations. And as he makes these observations, he's coming to certain conclusions. I went by the field of the slothful and by the vineyard of a man void of understanding. And lo, it was all grown over with thorns and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. Then I saw and considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction. Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come like one that traveleth, and thy want like an armed man. In verse 30, just looking at this section, what we have is there are people who are described in that verse 30. The first one is described as slothful, or we could say a sluggard. And that word means to lean idly. You can see someone just leaning against the wall doing nothing. And that's the thought of it, is just standing and doing nothing. The way we could summarize it in one word is they're lazy. And it's lazy, of course, physically here, speaking of being lazy with regard to fields and vineyards. But, of course, the application to us is being lazy spiritually. God promised us conformity to the person of His Son, but He didn't promise us comfort. Heaven is assured, but it's not here yet. So it's not a time to be lazy spiritually. There's a time for us to be diligently keeping our hearts and minds. 1 Thessalonians, you know, gives us that principle, no work, no eat. And that's true spiritually as well. We need to be active spiritually. So there are a series of questions we could ask ourselves about spiritual laziness. And I don't know if you find it to be true, but I find that just asking questions of myself, and when you're teaching asking questions, it's a great way to learn. In fact, in the Greek culture, asking questions was one of the primary ways of teaching. So we could ask questions like, am I spiritually lazy in the sense that perhaps I don't pray? Perhaps if we looked at our prayer life, we could say, you know, how much do I pray? How much is prayer an importance to me each day? How much time do I spend communicating with the Lord? And a similar thing could be, am I lazy when it comes to reading my Bible? And that's when the Lord communicates to us. Am I lazy? Is it just something I just don't get around to? Or I've consciously just kind of made a decision, I'm going to do other things with my time? Or are these part of our routine maintenance of our souls as we go through life? It's easy for these things to drop off. Am I lazy when it comes to attendance, to the assembly functions and meetings and gatherings? We know that that's a thing that can easily take place. Perhaps we had good habits and we let them slip. We become lazy. Maybe we had habits of prayer and Bible study or visiting the sick or whatever it may be, and now we find ourselves just not doing it anymore. one that we may not think of, but we could become lazy, and that's in confession. You know, it's important that we keep a short list with God, and it's important that as sin does come into our life, that we don't become lazy in the sense of we just shrug it off. There should be a confession. 1 John chapter 1, of course, would be one of the passages that would encourage that. We could say, do I procrastinate? Do we know there's things I should be doing spiritually, but somehow I just never get around to them, or always pushed out to tomorrow? So these are some things we can ask ourselves that are very practical with regard to our own spiritual lives and the condition of our souls. You'll notice not only was the person in that verse lazy, a sluggard or slothful, but it also says, by the vineyard of the man void of understanding, and the could be translated lack of sense or in need of sense. We could call it common sense. Common sense is very important. There's a vast difference between being intelligent and having common sense. Going back 20 some years ago, I was in a position where I hired and fired people. Thankfully, I never fired anyone, but I hired individuals. And many of them came to me, had excellent educations, had years of training, perhaps. This was in the computer field. And this may sound strange, but I was more important in their common sense than I was their education. Because there were many, many people with education, but far fewer with common sense. But that's also true spiritually. You know, it's, do I lack spiritual common sense? We could ask. For instance, where do I go? Now, in our land, it's obviously a lot easier to go further. But it's more thinking of what places do I go? We could say, what do I read? Does it make spiritual common sense that I read this book? I don't mean the Bible, I'm saying a book. Perhaps you read it and you even know when you enter into the book that it's not going to be spiritually edifying. So we ought to ask a question. Is it spiritual common sense to read a book that's not going to edify me spiritually? In fact, may bring on deterioration, rust into my Christian life a lot faster. Question like, what do I listen to? I noticed as we went around the island that the young people have bicycles with the boombox on the back. And, of course, not only do they listen to it, all the rest of us listen to it. But in the States, we just do that out of our cars. You know, they just build these huge speakers in the back and put down the window. And as you obviously know, from a physics standpoint, that the bass notes travel much further than the high notes. In fact, those who are engineers will tell you it's very hard to insulate buildings, for example, from the bass notes. You have to have some pretty heavy material like lead in your walls and things like that are pretty thick to stop those bass notes. And as you get into the car, you would sense, well, there are other notes, but as you're walking down the street, it seems like it's just the bass notes. Well, you have to ask yourself as Christians and young people, does this make common sense that I fill my mind with these things? Will this help me as far as my spiritual growth? Will it keep me from deteriorating and falling away? Is it common sense? One of the worst things we could believe that would demonstrate the lack of common sense spiritually would be the thought and the belief that I can neglect my soul and it will not deteriorate. That would show an indication of a real lack of spiritual common sense to think that I can feed my soul trash, I can feed myself things of this world, and not feed myself things that are spiritually edifying, and I'm just going to go off normally like nothing has changed. That would be the real lack of spiritual common sense. Now, if you look at verse 31, it's no longer the people who are being described, but the property that is being described. It says it was grown over with thorns and nettles. thorns and nettles, as we read back in Genesis, are the products of a cursed earth. Do you remember? After the fall, the earth was cursed. And the earth is often used as a picture of the flesh. And that just as Cain brought his offering that was of the cursed earth, you see, and it was not acceptable to God. The very source of Cain's offering was cursed. He brought it from the cursed earth to God. And it's a picture of the flesh, what the flesh produces compared to what the spirit would produce. And so when we think of land, trying to bring forth things out of land, they're cursed. And so Adam has to be told to work at it and to sweat at it. But we can come to this also conclusion is this. Unkept ground always returns to nature. Unkept ground always returns to nature. Meaning, again, if I have a property and it's cleared and it's maybe perhaps even producing fruit and produce, crop of some kind, and I totally neglect it, I walk away from it, it no longer produces things that are profitable. Given time, it will be filled with the thorns and the thistles. And in our part of the land, it would be filled with dandelions. I don't know if you have dandelions here or not, but up in our part, they're prolific. If your neighbor has a lawn of dandelions, they're yellow, and they have a big part of the leaves that kill the grass under them, and people spend many, many dollars putting down a killer for dandelions. If your neighbor has them and you're downwind, you can count on having them because they have a very light seed that eventually the flower goes to seed and just goes through the air, and sure enough, you're going to have them too. That's the way it works. But you see, spiritually speaking, we could be looked at as a piece of land, and, you know, if we just leave it go, and as the saying goes, unkept ground always returns to nature. We just leave things go. You know what's going to start showing up in our life? The flesh. The products of the flesh will automatically come. We don't have to culture them. We don't have to fertilize them. We don't have to care for them. If we neglect our souls and we don't care for it, the next thing is we begin to see the products of the flesh coming along naturally. It's always there. If we're a believer in the Lord Jesus, our flesh is not 1 ounce better today than it was the day you were saved. God doesn't work with it, does not try and rejuvenate it or anything of that nature or rehabilitate it. It's cursed. It's no good. And if we fail to feed ourselves spiritually, our unkept ground is going to return to nature. And we're going to start seeing the product of the flesh come out in our life. And also what comes out of our life in that condition, the thorns and the nettles, it's not only that they come out of our life, but typically those things harm other people. It isn't just that I start to do something that's obviously not in keeping with the will of God. That's true. Those kind of things will crop up. But those kind of things hurt other people. I'm told Scotland has a national anthem that includes a thistle because there was a time when the Danish army was trying to advance on them in bare feet in order to surprise them, and they stepped on the thistles and they were no longer silent. They're harmful. And you know, just like the dandelions go from the neighbors to your property or your property to the neighbor's property, what we do in life typically never just involves just ourselves, does it? I commit sin, I do things, it's just not me. It has a way of impacting you and other believers in the assembly and family members and children. It's a very important thing to understand that unkept ground returns to nature, and what is produced there is harmful not only to me, but to others around me. I had a boyhood buddy, some of you would know him. He called my mother mother, and I called his mother mother. We were in each other's home almost, seemed like, I'm sure, to our parents, continuously. And his mother would often come to me and kind of put her finger in my face. I guess she thought I was the one that needed it, and said, Stephen, and you know when someone says, Stephen, you know what you're going to get. Stephen, remember this. You never fall alone. What she was saying, you know, if you fall, you're going to take my son with you. And I'm sure my parents felt the same way about him. If he falls, he's going to take me with him. And that's true as you young people get together and things, and all of us, any age, when we fall, we just don't go by ourselves. We impact others. We're harmful to them. But you'll notice it also says not only were there thorns and nettles, there was, the wall was broken down. These walls, and this is, I believe, on the man of a lack of spiritual common sense. These walls were boundary walls. They marked a distinction between properties. And so they were lines of demarcations. And you know what happens when we become, we fail to keep ourselves healthy spiritually? The walls of demarcation begin to fall. The walls of separation begin to fall. And we begin to go into the things of the world without any thought. We don't see any difference. Our discernment goes to a level where we don't see any difference between what the world is doing and what I can do as a Christian. And we begin to follow the world. There's no sense of separation. And the little foxes creep in and the little things come in. And I'll say this to you as young people, there's a hedge about you. That hedge is Christians. That hedge could be the assembly. But if you're determined to break through the hedge, once you get past the hedge, there's no limit to how far you can go. You would never dream how far you could go. And so these walls of discernment and demarcation need to be reestablished, and we need to say, you know, that's of the world. What has happened to the church, unfortunately, because of prosperity? Prosperity has hurt the church far, far more than persecution. Persecution, under persecution, the church grew. Under prosperity, the church gets lazy. And when this happens, you know what happens? This is where the world is. And this is where the church is. We live as close to the line as we can. And then next thing you know, the world shifts again. And instead of us staying here, we shift over to where the world was. The world shifts again, and we shift over. We're always telling ourselves we're separate from the world. But remember, the world is getting worse. If we keep saying we're only separate from the world, but yet we're doing everything they used to do, we're really not keeping the lines of demarcation. The walls of separation are falling down. And so remember that as one walks past your property, spiritually speaking, the outward condition of that property is a reflection of the inner condition. Think of that now. As people look on the exterior, a lot of people today, I notice, exterior doesn't matter. The Lord reads the heart. The Lord knows the heart. Yes, I know the Lord knows the heart. But if the heart is right, you'll see it on the exterior. And if the heart is not right, you'll see it on the exterior. So we think of these, not only the people, but the property. But look at verse 32. There is a process of learning. And from this we can gather great lessons. He said, I saw. You'll notice the first thing he's doing is observing. Many saints walk through the world, I think, with blinders on, like, you know, racehorses. And they see nothing that's happening. For you who are parents of young children, some of the greatest lessons you can teach them, you're going to learn by being observant in life. We were just talking the other week here. You had the rage out here that came in, and I said to somebody, well, how's that develop? And they said, well, it starts in a storm way out at sea. Could be north of here. And as the waters are churned up, eventually it ripples. And eventually it ripples to the coast, and so we start to see the breakers coming in. Well, that's a tremendous lesson with regard to observing. I said to him, that's a good lesson, isn't it? That we do things, number one, that take time to unfold the consequence. At the moment, we think, oh, nothing happened. But the truth is, over time, there will be a consequence, and it may fall on someone else's shore. It may provide problems for your children or your children's children or your children's children's children. So we want to think beyond the just the moment. We want to realize, where will this ripple to? So being observant, we learn lessons. And this man observed. And you'll notice what he observed. He observed the property that he went by. What he saw was not the owners, not the people. He saw their fields and their vineyards. And from that, he could draw conclusions. He said, I saw it and considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction. Here's an individual who spends time thinking. We live in a world that does anything it can so as not to have to think. And you know the word amusement is the word muse, which means to think, with a negative prefix a, so it really means not to think. This is exactly what amusement means. A being a negative prefix, muse to think, no thinking. And you know when we're watching TV and we're watching the football and we're watching this, we're not thinking. In fact, what's happening is they're thinking for us and they're feeding it into us. So when you think of the amusement of the world, remember, it's Satan's objective to fill us with amusement because we will not think then. And we will not think like this person. They're observant. You know, you want to look at good men. They're example, Paul tells Timothy. Find those that are walking godly. Observe them. But likewise, observe bad men because they're a warning. My oldest brother goes around with little sayings, and one of his sayings is this. There's only one thing worse than learning by experience. That's not learning by experience. And it's possible, isn't it, if we would observe other people's mistakes and what they paid, it would save us the cost. The best experience to learn from is other people's. It's cheaper. So you see them make a mistake and you see the impact in their life and what it costs them. We should learn from that. I mean, we should never go the path he went. That would be absolutely foolish. We hadn't learned from experience of someone else's. And so we want to be observant. We need to keep our eyes open to be alert. You know, Isaac Newton sitting under the tree with his friends when the apple fell, his friends saw an apple fall. It's not what Newton saw. He saw the law of gravity. And so from things, you know, we want to be observant and learning. And that's exactly what this person is doing. Only now we're talking in a spiritual sense. And so life provides many spiritual lessons to us as we observe and look. But not only look and observe, we need to think and meditate. He says in that verse, I considered it well. That's meditation. That's applying my heart to what I saw. I don't just observe it and write in the book that I observed this. No, I meditate on it. I think on it. And from that, I learn something. And the Bible is filled with instructions. Psalm 1 says, the blessed man is a meditator. He's separate from the partnerships with the world and the pathway of the world and the principles of the world. But he meditates day and night in the Word. That's what he fills his mind with. It says that's a happy, blessed man. They think. And we as Christians need to be thinkers. We need to take these things and think about them. Whether you're awake in the middle of the night or driving your car or out in the boat, there are opportunities to think of things that would be helpful spiritually. Now look at the conclusions. Conclusion is given to us. He says, I drew conclusions and I received instructions. I saw it. I considered it. I thought on it. I looked upon it and I received some teaching. The things that I saw were things that really I could bring to a conclusion or understand a lesson. And here are some lessons he learned. And we can learn about neglecting our souls. Neglect is never planned. Anyone that I know, and I know men who have unfortunately fallen, spiritually speaking, I'm not talking about the loss of their salvation, I'm talking about they have fallen away in which they can no longer serve the Lord in the capacity they were. Well, I don't think those individuals sat down and said, you know, on Monday, March 1st, I'm going to fall. I'm going to just stop doing things. and deteriorate. I'm just going to quit. No, they don't do that. It's the surrender of little things. Notice what he says in verse 33. Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. The image in verse 33 is what? Someone who's only going to take a short break. They're only going to take a short break, you know. I've been reading my Bible now pretty faithfully, and I got some things I got to do, and I think I'll put it aside for the day, and tomorrow comes along, and the same thing happens again, and you didn't start out with the intention of your spiritual life just falling apart. There was a sacrifice of these habits and little things that you've done before. And so, our thinking is this won't be permanent. And by one step at a time, we fall away spiritually, our condition. So neglect is never planned, and eventually neglect will be rationalized. We'll start to justify it. You know, the Proverbs have a lot to say about sluggards. It says the sluggard is wise in his own eyes. The sluggard says it's too cold to plow. Well, if it's too cold to plow, you obviously waited too long. You put it off. You procrastinated. He also says there's a lion in the street. Now what he's doing is fabricating stories to cover what he has failed to do. So remember this, neglect is never planned. And neglect is rationalized. We begin to give excuses and reasons and justify why we're not doing what we should do. Neglect eventually leads to ruin. Leave the property go. Leave your boat go. Leave your house go. Leave your body go, and you know it eventually leads to ruin. Now it takes time, and that's what he's saying us right here in verse 34. So shall thy poverty come like one that traveleth. The analogy I would use is this. I was one of four sons. I'm one of five sons. And we would often go to New Jersey coast for vacation because I had a great aunt who had a bungalow there. And so for us to get there, it probably was 75 miles for us to travel. But this goes back in days when there was no air conditioning in the car. And so you got four sons, and all your luggage could be some of it on the roof. You got four sons who were constantly asking the question, are we almost there? You know, you might be 5 miles down, are we almost there? You're sitting in there packed in like sardines, and you're sweating, and the wind is whipping through the car because you got the windows down. And finally we go across the bridge and we're into New Jersey. Are we almost there? And it just went on constantly. It was almost like as a young child, we're never going to get there. But you know, given time, we got there. And that's exactly what he's saying about, thy poverty shall come like one that traveleth. Give your lack of attention spiritually to yourself, to your spiritual condition. And given time, you'll get there. And the there you don't want to be. David never set out to plan his fall as he did. He took a break. All his soldiers were out fighting, but he took a break, and that break led him, you know, the path. And given time, we can wind up in conditions we just think, it would never happen to me. I'm a Christian. It just wouldn't happen. Well, given time, it'll happen if you neglect your spiritual growth in your spiritual condition. So it eventually leads to ruin, and eventually it leads to captivity. That's what he says, thy want like an armed man. The very thing that you fall into then captures you, and the way out is pretty hard. We know people who dabble in things like drugs and alcohol. They never planned, you know, to get to the end of, quote, being an addict or an alcoholic. They never planned that. So they do a little, and then a little, and a little more, and a little more. Next thing they get, eventually, time, they get there. But when they get there, they're now enslaved, and they can't get out. And it's not only those kind of things, is it? I mean, we know what the world is offering now. Theater, pornography, everything, you know. A little, a little, a little, a little. I wouldn't go that far. Given time, you go that far. And trying to get out is very, very difficult. It's like you're captured by an armed man. So we want to keep our hearts with all diligence. We need to maintain ourselves spiritually. One of the ways is coming to the assembly gatherings and being under the sound of the word, praying, reading the scriptures. They things we need to do, because if we don't do them, it isn't like we stand still. As Christians, we're rowing upstream. And the moment we stop, we just don't stay there. We start drifting back. So we need to keep rowing up the stream. And he wants us to keep a watch. And there are many verses. Our time is gone, but there are many verses that would tell us about keeping a watch on our hearts. For instance, watch and pray that you enter not into temptation. So we need to be alert. We need to build the walls back up again of separation between what a Christian really is and what the world is. We need to pull the weeds out of our gardens. But here are some closing thoughts that I'll just leave you. You do not need to sin to backslide. We typically think, some backslidden Christian must have sinned grossly to get to that condition. Nope. You don't need to sin to backslide. You simply need to do nothing. You just simply have to do nothing. Don't read, don't pray, don't come to the assembly. Don't spiritually be observant. Don't spiritually be learning. That's all you need to do. Do nothing. And it will unfold just like property returns to nature's control when left alone. You just leave your soul alone and it will deteriorate on its own. So you don't need to sin. Just do nothing. And lastly, as I already said, you're either progressing or you're regressing. You're never sitting still as a Christian. If you're a Christian, either you are growing and making progress because you are diligently keeping your heart, you are diligently in the Word, diligently praying, diligently staying with the saints, or you're going backwards because you've avoided these things. You are not maintaining your soul spiritually, so you're going to start to go in reverse. Very simple lesson, isn't it? When you leave here and you drive around the island and you see an empty lot that's just fully overgrown, remind yourself, unkept ground always returns to nature. And when your boat is kind of discolored and the bottoms are all filled with whatever you get here, barnacles or whatever, remind yourself too, we need to maintain our soul as much as our boats and our houses. Very, very important, because if not, it can take us to a place we never, never thought we would be and a place we never wanted to be. So let's just close in prayer. Gracious God and Father, we just thank you for your lessons that you give us in your word that are so clear and practical, that talk to us about everyday life, and we know of a truth that these things speak of us and our needs. And we see from nature around us and what we observe these principles, and we know it's true spiritually. So we pray that those of us who are Christians would be diligent, work at keeping our hearts, and help us to reconstruct the walls of separation and to remove the weeds that have come into our lives so that we might be pleasing to thee. Help us to learn these simple lessons. And so we just commit your word to thee this morning, ask your blessing upon it, and pray these things in the name of your Son, our Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.